Blog Talk Radio.
Women have the power to transform this world. We can end crime and violence if we all agree to do one thing: share. Let's share our wisdom, share our time, share our talents, share our finances, but most of all, let's share our love. This is the Female Solution. Join me, Naima Latif, every morning, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time, as we bring you stimulating discussions about the issues affecting our lives. If you're listening online at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution, press the blue button that says follow and get our daily topics every morning directly to your email and your smartphone.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif, executive producer of the Female Solution Radio Show. We invite you to call in 515-605-9325 and participate in this daily think tank as we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony. We are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Sawubona. In Senegal, Nangadef. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all.
Tune in to Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green on Thursdays at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, to hear great topics and stories on grief and turn it into victory. Join Dr. Debbie Green to listen to stories of triumph and learn how to overcome. You are not alone in your life, and there is hope in the darkest hour. This is your time to learn strategies and solutions to improve your life. It's your time. So join Dr. Debbie Green with Soulful Solutions and call in on Thursday at 7 a.m. Central Standard Time and 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time at 515-605-9325 with comments and questions. Look to hear from you real soon.
Grand Rising, and thank you all for joining us on this Thursday morning for Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. I'm Naima Latif, your co-host, and we're going to be joined. Here we are joined by Dr. Debbie Green, and you can join us live on Facebook. Go to Facebook and go to Soulful Solutions, and you'll see the beautiful face of Dr. Debbie Green.
Good morning, good morning. Grand Rising, Grand Rising.
Yeah, have we hit that live button yet?
Doing it right. It's spinning.
Yeah, well, you can be heard on, there we go, all right, and we are here live on Facebook with Dr. Debbie Green, and you're going to get some soulful solutions, especially if you've had the experience, the unfortunate experience of having been violated in some kind of way, and this is a painful memory that you may be carrying. How do you handle it? Did you shut down or blow up in your emotions? How did you feel the next day? Well, our nervous system is hardwired with major responses from the top of our heads to the soles of our feet. Emotions are like fired pistons waiting to explode if not controlled by our choices and decisions. It is normal to get angry when you've been violated, but not to hold on to it for periods of time until we're like walking, breathing landmines. So we're going to join Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green and take a closer look and discuss the matter. And you may find out that you have some brewing emotional fires inside of you that you may need to put out. So thank you for giving us that insight, Dr. Debbie Green.
Absolutely, absolutely. Good morning, Grand Rising, everyone. Oh, wow. As we are actually preparing for the storm here in Georgia.
Yeah.
South Carolina on the Florida and the eastern borders. You know, I tell you what, I think the sea is angry right now. I believe the sea has, the ocean itself has emotions.
Yeah.
That it just really wants to express to mankind, you know. So, I mean, we just pray for the blessings of all the Floridians that took that hit, are preparing to take that hit of Fiona or Ian, because it's two of them.
Two of them. Yeah, we need to think about that. We done made the earth so mad, it's two forces that are rising up to show us you all have been too negative, and we gotta get rid of this negative energy you all have put out.
Exactly. And so our topic is really a very significant topic to the well-being of a human being, because bitterness actually is an emotion that carries other emotions with it, and it's not like you're just gonna be bitter and not be angry and not be resentful and not feel violated or feel like you need to, you know, put out some kind of vengeance against someone because of what you experience. So there's a lot of dynamics that's going on there. The first thing I want to start with is, what is bitterness? What is that? Mm-hmm. What's the terminology of that word? Bitterness is a actual emotion linked from anger. Mm. It's linked from anger. It's when that person then gets into a area of themselves where the bitterness or the emotions turn inward there, and then when they turn inward, they come outward, which means it's called displaced anger, where the person that probably affected them in some kind of way really doesn't get the full brink of the impaction of what they feel. It's usually someone that doesn't have a lot to do with it.
Mm.
So they, because if you can tell a bitter person, they're not happy. They're really most of the time complaining about something in life. They often are easily irritated. They have a very low tolerance in their personality, and it seems like when you even try to come up with a very positive word to give them, they shoot it down. They're very pessimistic, and you know, and you say, well, something had to happen for that person to feel the way they feel. Well, yes, something did. You know, often, sometimes when people are violated verbally, mentally, sexually, any type of way a person can be violated, they can hold on to the anger of that violation that they felt at that very moment, which is primary. Primary is when it first began. So that primary area is lingers. They don't die down, as one would say, or, you know, they continue to hold intensity of that anger, and then here comes unforgiveness, because unforgiveness feeds and breeds bitterness.
Mm.
So if you know, when we're holding things inside from towards another person or even ourselves, because there is such thing as self bitterness. We are unforgiving of ourselves, that we might have done something that we regret, we feel guilty, and then we get angry at ourselves, we start self-defeating, you know, thinking that, oh, I'm such a failure, I never amount to anything, that's why people don't love me. So that feeds that bitterness right there. You see how that those two connections start to then create a mindset of just pessimistic behavior. So, and of course, over a period of time, you say, well, how can someone be bitter for years? Oh, they can.
I've known them.
They can.
We've all known those people that bitterness becomes their very personality. They're always angry.
Yeah.
Always angry, and it's difficult to be around people when they have just absorbed and inculcated the energy of anger, and they can't even have a pleasant conversation. It's like this anger is eating them up on the inside.
Yes, yes, because that's exactly what it's doing.
Mm.
So, you know, we take the mind first, you know, the mind under the subconscious and conscious states, under massive amounts of anger and bitterness, okay, you even bring on a state of confusion, a state of not even being able to concentrate on just everyday levels because of that pressure and stress. And a lot of people don't realize it until they start becoming impaired. Versus mildly impaired cognitions, like just not being able to concentrate on their job or talk to people in communication. They shut down very easily. They don't give the opportunity to voice someone else's opinion. They don't want to listen to what someone else says, so they cut them off. You know, it's so many different personality traits of a person that's carrying a lot of bitterness in their heart. So please understand, bitterness is carried in the heart and in the spirit.
Wow.
It is not carried in the mind. The mind is just trying to make sense of it. The heart is, if it's full of bitterness, that means you have discord in there, you have strife, you have unforgiveness, you know, you have resentment. All of those things add to the bitterness. And so if life is giving them some form of decency, of peace, they self-sabotage because they can't, unfortunately, I don't have the self-awareness because the bitterness has been there so long. They don't have the self-awareness to realize that they are you know, hurting themselves in it all. So when someone comes and say, hey, what's wrong? Oh, there's something wrong with me. Leave me alone. You know, you'll hear those type of responses. They're not easily, they don't open up. Very seldom do they open up. They don't tell what they feel. They hold things inside. So, of course, over a period of time, the conscious mind tries to make some type of ego defense mechanism, again, which is called displaced anger, because they want them to get, you know, the brain is such a wonderful creation that we were given by our creator that it tries to help and assist all of this pressure that's in the spirit. So it often, you know, has us to displace anger, which means anger that's been built up, we have to target it to some other area. Unfortunately, when it builds up too much, then it turns into this thing called rage. So rage then turns into, of course, we know it as today as suicide, either suicide or suicide, homicide, as we know it today. And that's in extreme cases. That's not saying that everyone goes through that, but that's when that area has been held on so long to the point where it has no other space to filter. The brain doesn't have any other area to filter because of that longevity and that intensity of holding on to that anger and then turning into other things. That's why it's so very important to when anxiety comes and depression, because it is a part of bitterness. Most people who have extreme bitterness go through bouts of anxiety and depression. They don't say much about it. Some do. Some know because they can't have a productive life. It's hard for them to even get along with people on the job.
Wow.
So they find themselves being out of place, you know, always going from job to job to job because they can't get along with people. And it's not the people. It's what's inside of them. Even their relationships are burdened down with a lot of discord. Family relationships, relationships one-on-one, like heterosexual relationships. If they have children, their children's relationships are burned down because a bitter person doesn't have any peace of mind.
Wow.
None.
No peace.
So
of mind.
You ask, yes, and it's amazing that the self-awareness and the self-acknowledgement does not actually bring them up to par, which means make them want to make a change until they literally start deteriorating on a larger scale. And when I say that, when the depression then becomes severe and then they become suicidal.
Mm.
And then that's when, you know, at some point someone, and we're hoping that they will come in for help because we know stories. We've heard stories before so-and-so committed suicide. And, you know, okay, well, if a person loves themselves and loves others, why would they destroy themselves? So bitterness had to be there.
You know, what's interesting, and we talked about this, as a matter of fact, Viata speaks often about how the body manifests that very energy of anger and turns into cancer, where you're literally eating yourself up, you know, like what's eating you? Yourself. You're eating yourself. The anger is eating you, and it becomes a physical manifestation in your body of cancer. And there's science that shows particular parts of the body that manifest cancer based on the type of violation that you had and where the energy of the anger has settled. So sexual violations for women often end in things such as cervical cancer and uterine cancer because it has to do with the area of the body that was violated, your reproductive system, your sexuality. So the feeling of anger that you're holding on to, it becomes manifested in the cells of your body. I mean, this is an amazing science of energy. And
yes,
this is why forgiveness is such a critical thing, because you cannot heal from illnesses that are manifestations of anger until you let the anger go. And that involves a spiritual level, which of course is why this is Soulful Solutions, a spiritual level that empowers you to not express that anger at someone, but to dissipate the anger so that it no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a process of really letting go of your anger at yourself, or in your mind you might think you allowed this to happen. You know, I let myself get raped or I let myself get molested. So you've got anger at yourself, which
mm-hmm.
is incorrect, and then anger at the other person. How could they have done that to me? So you're holding anger at that. And it's really a process of evolution of thought to understand whatever happened. That person was only expressing their level of awareness, their own inner pain. Abusers become abusers. Those who have had pain inflict pain. And so you can realize that what they did to you does not define who you are and does not make you a lesser person. It merely expresses what pain they are still holding.
Correct.
And you can have compassion and let it go. But that's some steps. And, of course, our dear Dr. Debbie helps us get through those steps so that we can let go of that anger that's really eating us.
Yeah, the heart and mind and the spirit has to connect. And if there's a barrier between any of those, what happens is fear is the one that starts to manifest.
Mm.
So when unforgiveness, let's just say unforgiveness is something a person is holding on to either towards themselves or towards someone else, they're building up fear whether they realize it or not. We were not designed to hold on to anything other than love. You know, so when, and you're like, and you, I don't want to minimize. I want you to understand something. I don't want to minimize your pain. Whatever a person experienced, yes, you did experience that. But the thing about this is to keep reliving it is the most, you know, very unopportune thing you can do for yourself. When you keep reliving the same thing over and over again, then it becomes a habit to the mind. So now you're training the mind, you're literally training the mind to relive this thing and keep that open wound open, and so it cannot heal. And when it cannot heal, it's going to cause other deteriorations in the body. That's the way it works. It works that way. And because the body is does it's a physical manifestation. You have three manifestations from any type of you know, I call it deterioration emotion. Well, because right now we're talking about bitterness, which we're talking about anger. Anger manifests as mentally, it manifests as emotionally, it manifests as also physically. You see what I'm saying? The spirit man, the inner man, does not hold on to any emotions. It's just those three components I just mentioned to you. Because it's non-tangible. So the tangible part of you, which is your physical being, that manifests as a dis-ease, because you are dis-ease in your mind and you're dis-ease in your heart. So why would it not manifest hypertension or you know, heart disease or, you know, cancer? Because these are dis-eases. We call them diseases, but if you really look close to that word, you'll see dis-ease. And that's exactly what it is. So let's just say, for the sake of understanding and learning, if we then addressed these unresolved issues, you know, being abused as a child, a lot of the abusers, you know, going on with their life, but the abusees are still suffering. They're suffering with the memory. They're suffering with the feeling and the emotions of that event. And that all of that then builds up, again, this resentment, this bitterness against, you know, it could be, if they were violated from a man's point of view, it could be built up against men. If they were violated from a woman, they could be built up against women. Or even if they, a lot of times people blame themselves. Well, how could I let that happen? You know, what's wrong with me? Then they blame themselves. Well, I'm just here to tell you it was just an experience. That's all it was. It was an experience that happened to you, but you cannot allow it to deter your being to have the best of life, because it's so important that we live a life of freedom, a life of peace, a life of joy. And, you know, we have so many people walking around on this earth that have been violated and also violating others, you know, and because they've been violated, it's just a domino effect of things. But the question you ask yourself, how long shall I live this way? How long shall I hold on to this? You know, how much of you do you have to give that thing before it's done, before it's finished? And, you know, how people, I mean, I have patients and clients that's been holding on to bitterness for years, and their body is deteriorating, and they don't even realize it.
Now, what happens when, and this is unfortunately common, let's say someone has been violated by a relative and, you know, they're, maybe it happened in childhood, maybe if they try to tell somebody they weren't believed, that relative is still in the family, still coming to family gatherings, and, you know, they're an adult now and they know this happened and it has affected them, and maybe they've tried to drown the pain in alcohol or chase it away with drugs, and they're still in pain, and they still have to keep facing this relative that violated them, and they can't get any sense of justice. what are ways they can address that? Now, some have said they need to confront that person, and you know, sometimes that happens and a person, you know, denies it, so you still don't get any relief. There's no apology or an acknowledgement, so you're still holding the anger. You can't kill them. I mean, they're your family, but they violated you, and you have to live with it as if it didn't happen, but you feel violated inside, and it is affecting you. Like you say, bitterness, anger, maybe drug addiction, alcoholism, and that person is still there living their happy life, and you can't get any relief. How does a person handle that situation?
Well, the thing about if they are around that person, because I've seen, you know, patients or individuals that live with their abusers, and when it's, let's just, for the sake of understanding, approach it from an adolescent point of view, then I go to the adult. This is a very difficult for a child. You know, it's extremely difficult for anyone, but extremely difficult for a child to have been violated by a family member. And like you said, it happens more so than, you know, than what we can possibly imagine. If that person is not getting some type of relief from somewhere, like if they shared it with another individual and that person's not doing anything, it's going to start a deterioration in that child. And it's going to create a mental illness. That's what's going to happen. It will create anxieties, depression, even what we call disassociation, where that person will then go into a catatonic state and go back into that area. It can also create PTSD. So it's a lot of things that can happen if that, you know, if that child is not removed out of that environment. Then it can, these same conditions can also be in adults as well. Because remember, the human brain does not understand trauma. It only just replicates that in the memories of the cell. So it's like as soon as that person sees it or hears it or feels it, it automatically takes them back into the same violation over and over again. And before they realize they're in that moment of time, so they never get the opportunity to heal. They don't, and as they grow up, their whole life is affected.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Everything is affected. It's not something you just put away, and it breeds bitterness because that person is angry. They're angry because they feel abandoned. They're angry because they feel violated. They're angry because no one is helping them. You know, it's ongoing, and the only thing that is going to heal that area is for them to come to themselves. And literally, as they get, you know, for adolescents, it takes a whole different type of therapy to help them. But for adults, you know, they have to come to a point when, in reference and say, how long shall I suffer with this? And make a decision to take their power back. And the only way to take the power back is to have forgiveness. And forgiveness doesn't mean you condone what they did or agree what they did. It's just that you're ready to move on. You're ready to move on and take your life back. So when we do forgiveness therapy, because it is a therapy, we often ask the abusee or the person that's been violated in some kind of way to make a conscious decision on their life. And ask them, okay, what conditions are you willing to let go of so that you can move on? What condition? Because if you stay where you are, you're only going to deteriorate.
Yes. I think that's the challenge that people have in believing that to forgive means to say in your mind, it's okay what they did to me. And that's what they can't do, and that's why they have to be guided to see it differently so that they are not feeling like I'm condoning how they hurt me, which means I was worthy of being treated this way, and I can't do that. So that's where people are stuck. So we got to take a break, and when we come back, perhaps you can guide us through this mental, emotional, and spiritual process of forgiveness when you can't get vengeance or whatever it is you want to get from that person that hurt you, maybe they have passed on, maybe they're deceased, but you're still carrying the pain. How do you let it go because it's destroying you? So we'll be right back after this quick break, and we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We will be back in a moment, so stay with us.
Have you ever dreamed of going to exotic places, meeting fascinating people, enjoying uplifting music, and spending nights in a luxurious hotel? Do you look forward to a relaxing vacation where you can walk along the beach or sit in a quiet park and enjoy the sunset or sunrise? Whether you're flying around the world or driving across the country, we will share travel tips that will help you stay safe while you enjoy the journey. Join me every third Saturday of the month, 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Standard Time, and move around with Deborah here on the Female Solutions Show. Call in and comment 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak.
Crime in Chicago continues to increase. Communities and politicians must come together to make a change. No one person can solve these problems by themselves, but I believe together we can make progress. Let's provide job training, economic growth, and invest into our 77 communities. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
I'm Beata, your holistic life coach. These days, it's more important than ever to work on your physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual health. Are you consciously breathing deeply in stressful moments? Do you have a plan or daily routine to maintain balance in your awesome body? Are you struggling to be disciplined in your eating habits? When you partner with me, I'll help you develop a personalized health plan that works for your particular lifestyle. You can find out more about me at yourholisticlifecoach.com, where you can also review my 3-step protocol to guide you to abundant health. That's yourholisticlifecoach.com, and I'm Viato.
You can share an instance when you had to overcome some bitterness because of perhaps how someone treated you. Were you able to go through the process of forgiveness and letting go, or is it possibly still affecting you? Area code 312-671. I believe we've got our dear brother minister, Robert Floyd Plump, on the line, and so glad to hear that you are up and out of the hospital and on your way to continuing to doing great things. Thank you for calling today.
We are in Yashalom. Ahua, we don't die, we multiply. Black power forever. Black is beautiful, like you, Sister Naima Latif, and the Female Solution, all the sisters, and especially you, Dr. Debbie Green. I'm on your campaign, sister. The love train. Yeah, that's the hot girl, sister. Now you, thank you and Dr. B for calling me, too. You know, y'all have uplifted my spirit. You know, as they say, I'm on natural high, but I'm higher now than ever before. What a blessing, a revolving door in and out of the hospital. You know, and that was an experience. I'm just so happy. See, I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'm wealthy, and I'm wise. I trained my mind in that way because, see, healing equals to 23. And see, D equals to 23, like DC Mail Solution. The world's greatest radio and TV blog station in the nation.
All right.
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking about, you know, what you all were saying in terms of, a person's experience, you know, and they either can wind up hating themselves or hating somebody else, but see, in reality, hate is self-destruction, and people have to stop it in the name of love. They have to let go and let God. God's we are on, see? That's the conclusion, and the solution, too. See, let go and let God, Allah Yaakbar, is the greatest. So I know him as many, many names, Yahshua, the Lord of the world, who most know is Jesus Christ. And however, the reality is that he is a black man. Oh, yeah. Today is Thursday. I just want hallelujah. I just want to invite you, Sister Naima. I know, but Dr. Debbie Green, I want you to know that I'm on your campaign with Sister beloved President Harold Washington Park District, Darvin Watkins. You know, to get you here and back. You know what I mean? We're going to pay for your expenses and everything because you are
a
reflection.
Oh, you're
bringing
Dr. Debbie to Chicago? Is that what you're saying? You're bringing Dr. Debbie?
Oh, yeah. You ain't heard about it. Well,
okay.
We got to know
all right,
about it. We got to have Dr. And then remember, Sister Naima, I said, you know, out of all the different hotels, see, there's only one black-owned operated hotel, and that's the South Loop. So
okay,
you got
to
come
here. Bring her into the South Loop. All right. There we go.
Yeah, you know, remember Dr. Webb, Evan? Right. See, all of it connects, you know, and Pastor Sorten, you know, Buy Black Forever, you know, Juneteenth now, a national holiday, you know, for the whole community, remembering the world's greatest mayor, named the Honorable Mayor Harold E. Washington, said we must plump the whole community.
You know, Minister Plump, your spirit is what heals you. And no matter what your body goes through, it's the strength of your spirit that brings your healing. So having that upbeat attitude and positive mental attitude, like you always say, that actually has a physical impact in your healing, so that no matter what physical challenge you might go through, you come out of it because of the power of your positive spirit, and that does rejuvenate your body. So it's a spiritual energy that you have that keeps you rejuvenated. Because you're geared towards service, that is what is healing your body. And that is that's the spiritual science that we all need to master. If we understood that, we can overcome every illness.
You know, you're a master, too, now, Dr. Debbie Green, and you, too. You know, y'all are queens, and yet y'all create, because you all love the Mother Earth and the whole universe, you all create people like me, see, which is the female create the kingmaker. So I'm not the queen. You see what I mean? I'm a real black king. And see, the greatest thing is what you discover from within yourself. So you are absolutely positive, right on time, Sister Naima. And see, Neil Washington used to say it like this too. If you got it, you got it. So I've got it and you got it and we know it. And all we got to do is keep it together. See, the key word is together. Like together everyone achieves more. Together everyone achieves much. Together everyone achieves money. Together everyone achieves millions. Together everyone achieves miracles. All miracles come from only from God. So I'm the happiest man in the world living. I'm happy, I'm healthy, I'm wealthy, and I'm wise. And we can't wait to hurry up and get you here, Dr. Debbie Green. But meanwhile, Sister Name, y'all come on over to the leadership class, Atonement class in Prosperity, every Thursday at 3515. We'll be there today from 2 o'clock to 4 o'clock.
Thank you so much for sharing, as always, all you do, and we'll continue to
They got a call, though, to get into the building. So they got to call me at 312-671-2773. Minister Plump.
All right,
that's
be ready to answer your phone.
God bless
you. Okay.
We love you.
Thank you so much. We love
you.
Have
a season Plump day.
All right.
We are winning. Team 23.
All right now. Yes, sir.
Yes,
love his spirit.
Down to Chi-Town. Oh, my
goodness.
Yes. I told them better be ready. Just give me a mic and move out of my way.
There you go.
Absolutely. Yes. I think it's so he is truly amazing.
Yes.
You know, that's the epitome of peace. You know?
Yes.
That's epitome. And I mean, that's what it takes. It takes to not to hold on to nothing that's tearing you down. It's not worth it.
It's not.
It is not worth it. Anything that can detour you from having internal peace, that is the most valued thing in a commodity in the world.
Yes.
Because not many people have it.
Right. Yes. I think the thing people think has to happen is that someone else has to change what they're doing before I can be at peace. And when you think of it that way, you're always going to not be at peace because you can't control what other people do. And this is a cycle we get stuck in. You know, if that person changes the way they behave, then I'll be okay. Well, that person is stuck doing whatever they're doing. You have to create the peace from within yourself. That's the challenge that we have because no one teaches us how. No one teaches us that we can generate our own emotions regardless of what anyone else does. And even if someone is unkind, even if they're cruel, even if they have been abusive, we can still choose inner peace, and it doesn't have anything to do with whether or not someone else acknowledges they hurt us or someone else stops being mean to us. Or, you know, anything that someone else does, it doesn't have to determine how we feel on the inside.
Correct.
So how does someone get to that level of self-love and acceptance where they can let go of something that they have been carrying because someone else did them wrong, someone else abused them, someone else did something and seemingly got away with it and isn't acknowledging that they hurt them? How does a person, with all the memory of that hurt that they went through, how do they go through the process of letting it go so that they can be at peace?
Well, one thing that's extremely important that most people struggle with on this earth is self-love. We often, you know, think that we're not worthy of the love that we deserve. We can give it to anyone else freely, but when it comes to giving it to ourselves, we struggle in that. So one thing is extremely important. You got to know that you're worthy. You're worthy of your own being walking this earth, regardless of circumstance or situation. And you have to, again, as I said, you have to take back life. Life is sometimes throws us these curveballs, Naima, and these curveballs is not something to destroy us, but it's something that builds us up. And as I explain this, I want people to understand what is called what they call a survivor mentality versus a victim mentality. A survivor mentality says to itself, "I survived something that could have took my life. I survived through my blood, sweat, and tears. I survived regardless of what they tried to take from me or place upon me, I survived. I survived. And that survivor mentality then takes on a whole nother toll. That means that when we accept that through the whole parts of ourselves, our mind, our body, and our soul, then there's things that look like they are violating us, or violated us, seems minimum because you are a survivor thing. A survivor is one that takes all the energy out of what could have destroyed them and put it into the area for growth, for expansion. You know, they take it to a whole other level. We've heard many stories before how someone that went through a terrible ordeal, you know, to the hands of another individual and survived. And what they did with it, they went and told someone about it, wrote a book about it. They even created some type of foundation or non-profit about it. I mean, they took it to a whole nother level instead of them just sulking in that victim mentality mindset of pain. They shifted into another area. So, which means that they had to release that bitterness. They had to release all of those things in order for them to build up. They said, well, I'm not going to allow this to tear me down. I'm going to move on with this. I'm going to go into another area with this because I want to help someone and let someone hear my testimony, how I survived. You see the difference?
Because
if I'm still a victim of it,
I can't speak about it. Right. I'm helpless. It could happen again. I'm living in fear that it may happen again.
Yes.
Yes.
And you're crippling yourself mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. And again, you ask yourself, how long shall I hold on to this? You know, you have to analyze it, process it, so that you can move on. And there's otherwise, if you don't want to touch it and you don't want anyone else to touch it, then it lingers and it continues to expand because that's all it can do. You know, bitterness, extreme anger, all of these things, resentment leads to vengeance, rage. And again, it excels. It gets bigger. It's just like a balloon, you know what I'm saying? If you don't burst the balloon and take the air out of it, it's just going to keep getting, it's going to remain tight, it's going to remain rigid and expand because that's all it can do because we are a ball of energy, people. Your energy feeds certain things and whatever you choose, you made a choice to hold on to something, you're just feeding it. Whatever it is, you're feeding it because it feeds off of your energy. And as you said, what does that mean? That means because you're paying attention to it. Every day you may wake up with it. You may go to sleep with it. Okay, you're feeding it.
Yes.
Anything you put your mind to is going to expand. It's going to persist. So, again, you have to ask self, okay, what are you doing? Why are you doing this to yourself? What is it? Because, again, this person, whoever the person that violates you, doesn't matter who they are, they've moved on, they might have passed away, and you're still holding on to it like it happened yesterday.
Yes, so you're allowing your past to contaminate your present.
Absolutely. And it will contaminate your future.
It will contaminate your future.
And you know, this is the other part about this is that it lingers. It lingers from one generation to another generation.
Mm.
Because this type of energy is projected. As I said, bitterness is projected. It doesn't stay inside. Everyone knows that you're bitter. Everyone knows what you feel. You can't hide bitterness. It's not something you are able to hide. People on your job will know. Everyone will know that you are very unhappy. So what do you do with your children? How are you going to treat your children?
Mm.
Because you're bitter. Your children are experiencing this bitterness coming from you. And what kind of, how are you affecting them mentally with that bitterness?
This is a thing that is again, unfortunately, too common. There's a divorce, and maybe there was abuse in the marriage.
Yes.
And abandonment or whatever the case may be, and the mother has the custody of the children, and she's angry, and she's constantly spewing that anger out and attacking their father verbally in the presence of the children because she is angry with the relationship that the father had with her, the father her children had with her, but the children may still love their father, but their mother's anger, as a matter of fact, their mother gets angry if they express any kind of positive thing about a man she's still holding anger at because of whatever may have happened in the marriage, so she won't let them love him for whatever good he's done. She wants them to share her anger, share her bitterness, and she might even spew it out at them because maybe they look like him or have traits like him, and so that poison is what permeates their household. How does that affect the children in the long run when they're the products of that kind of toxic relationship that even though it ended, the bitterness and the anger is still in the house and they're still affected by it because of the mother's bitterness and anger that she's constantly expressing? How's that affecting the children?
Well, usually it turns out one or two ways, Naima. They're either going to follow suit and allow that bitterness to make them resent their father, or they're going to turn on the mother.
Mm. Mm.
Because the mother's been holding, you know, your father, I've heard this many times with the adolescents, she's always talking down or talking about my father. And that, and before the divorce, that child could have been close to the father. Mm-hmm. So then it looks like she's becoming the enemy more so than the matriarch of the family. Mm-hmm. So it starts division between those two. There starts division between the child and the mother. You know, because I believe that when a person goes through a divorce, when it's children, especially school-age children. I mean, it shouldn't be done at all, but school-age children is very, they're greatly affected. So
yeah.
They should not speak down on the other party. They should not speak bad about the other party because it's not healthy to them because it causes them to feel a certain way. And as I said, they're either going to agree with that or they're going to look at you as the enemy. And you're like, when I say the enemy, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you talking about him? Why are you, because he's not this. So it brings division.
Yeah.
You know, it literally brings division, and it will create bitterness.
Yes, I've seen that happen in so many families.
Mm-hmm.
And children are just torn apart because it's as if they're being forced to choose sides or forced to suppress the love they have for their father, who they may have been close to before the divorce. And it just, it makes them angry. And I've seen where children then act out, you know, depending on the age and stage that they are and their development. And even it depends on at what age they were when the divorce happens, because what I've observed is that whatever age that divorce happened, if it was at a critical stage, such as 5 years old, or understand that critical stage of beginning puberty at 13, those two ages and stages can really be traumatic for a child experiencing that disruption in their household and experiencing the bitterness of the parent who's raising them toward the other parent who is gone. And I've seen the disruption in their lives where they may either, you know, develop some physical illness or addiction or something, because it's as if that emotional trauma shaped their lives and shaped the rest of their development. Because the parents could not bring peace after their separation. It was only constant attack of each other, with children in the middle having to feel torn apart, having to feel like they have to choose one side or the other, or becoming bitter and angry at the person, either the person who left or the person who's with them in the house who's attacking the other person.
Right.
Either way, there's no peace for the child. And I've seen so many relationships where the custodial parent feels like they have to keep justifying the breakup by showing the children how bad the other spouse is. You know, I need you to know to see there was a reason why we divorced, and you know, it's their fault, and they're awful, and they did this, and they did that, and, you know, they're a terrible person, and see, they don't even come around to see you anymore, so they don't love you either, you know, just all of that. And
right.
It's so destructive. If we're the person who's in a broken relationship, how do we see ourselves, and how do we stop ourselves from doing that to our children? What stages do we have to go through in order to come to that inner peace where we're not bringing hell in our homes and pain in our children? How do we do that?
Again, we go back to that area of forgiveness. And, you know, it's, again, when these things start to happen, Naima, with different types of emotional roller coasters, as I call them, for whatever reasons thereof, people tend to move slow in these things because they hold on to so much. You know, this is our human body, our minds. We hold on to painful areas, you know, more so than things that give us joy, okay? So we hold on to that. Then hopefully we would have some type of awareness that we're holding on to it. So if we don't have any awareness, that, and then someone's trying to tell you, why do you keep talking about that? Why do you keep saying the same things over and over again? Then we start to cycle. But if we do have some awareness and say, you know what? Yes, I have been. I've been going through this, and I'm tired of even talking about it. I'm tired of going through it. Okay. All right, so now it's time to seek help. If you can't do it on your own, then you need a therapist to help you to move through these areas, you know, so that you don't allow yourself to get stuck in those areas of repeating, you know, the same thing. If I can give you an example, one of my clients is dealing particularly with a marriage, right? She's actually engaged to a gentleman that is battling a very strong addiction. And he has a mother that is always criticizing him and not, you know, she's always criticizing, speaking down to him. And the person I'm talking about, she's like, she's just so bitter. She's so angry. She never says anything, and she's been doing this for a long time. And they have had a lot of death in the family.
Mm.
You know, they lost the one that she's involved with, you know, he lost his son, and they lost his uncle. It was like three deaths in a row.
Mm.
So with all of that, I know that's the reason why the mother is bitter, because she's dealing with all this grief. But at the same token, she's allowing the bitterness to permeate her being and then going out to the son, because it was his son that was lost.
Oh.
The son was 24 years old and got killed.
Oh.
So, you know, and so it adds to all of the bills. So everybody's just hurting right now. Everybody's in a whole lot of pain. So she, the person I'm talking about, she's like, I can't do this. She said everybody's just in so much pain there, and they're going back and forth, and they're so bitter, they're so angry. And she has school-age kids. She's like, I got to pull them out of this because it's affecting them. They feel all this intensity of the family. So at this point, she had to make a conscious decision. She said, I don't know if I just need help. How do I get through this?
Wow.
You know, I love him, but I don't know if I want to stay in it. I don't want to stay in this family because I see that this family is just really chaotic.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to affect my children. So as I was, you know, giving her guidance and direction, that first she has to, you know, get herself together, you know, as far as, you know, what changes she wants to make. at that particular point and make a decision on that and then move on. Otherwise, you stay in the same position, dealing with the same cycles, experiencing the same pain. And most people, they, you know, it's so easy for us to stay there, but then after a period of time, we feel deteriorated. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you so many different examples of how, you know, this bitterness starts to transform. It transforms. I can give you another example of a marriage of 40-something years. The whole time, the woman in the marriage was the matriarch. She was the go-to person. She did everything. The husband only made sure the bills were paid.
Mm.
And though, but then he did, and he grew up without a father in the home.
So he didn't know how to emotionally bond with children.
No, he didn't know how to train the children.
Yeah.
So now it's like, you know, she's tired. She's worn out. She doesn't know what else to do. And she's like, no matter how much she tries to talk to him and let him know, you know, I can't keep going through this. I can't keep doing these things over and over again and then not having any peace of mind. I have no peace of mind.
Mm.
You know, my children are codependent on me. You are codependent on me, and I'm tired. She's in her 60s now.
Oh.
She was married since she was 18 years old.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So all of this time, she was just, you know, compromising.
Holding the anger in. Yeah.
Yeah, and building up this bitterness. So now she's bitter. She's upset. She's angry to the point where, you know, she can't stop crying. She's upset because he doesn't see the truth. And I told her, I said, you've been in this for 40-something years.
Yes.
And now it's coming towards the end of life. Now you no longer want it. You see it. You see the deterioration.
Wow.
You see that, you know, you have this beautiful everything. You have everything a person could want, but deep down inside, you're not happy.
Not happy. Wow. I mean, I see that situation in so many women that I know. And
women and men, you know, this is
why we ultimately die of cancer, because those years of resentment that we held in.
Yes.
But then you're thinking that the other person must change in order for you to be at peace, and that isn't the solution. It's us accepting them for who they are. And if a man goes into a marriage and he does not have the image of a well-rounded father figure, he doesn't know what that looks like, he doesn't know what the partnership relationship in the household is supposed to be, he's doing the best he knows how.
Right.
And if you can appreciate that he's doing the best he knows how, instead of holding the energy of he's taking advantage of me, he's not pulling his weight, he's not helping me with these children, I have to do everything, instead of carrying that energy of resentment, have compassion for him for not having the examples for all the things that a father and husband could be, and have appreciation for his efforts in doing the best he knows how. That's a big step, acceptance, and not seeing it as he's doing me wrong. He should be doing this, 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 and this. He doesn't know. He didn't have that. He didn't have
right.
that example to teach him. But he's doing the best he knows how. That would
exactly.
let go of a lot of anger and resentment and ultimate divorces after 40 years, because we'll see it differently. And it takes a lot for us to undo all those years of resentment built up in thinking that this person took advantage of me and didn't treat me the way I deserve because they didn't think I was worthy of good treatment, and they didn't help me. They didn't do this. They didn't do this. They didn't do this. All of that energy toward resentment instead of the energy of gratitude and appreciation for that person doing the best they knew how.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and I remember speaking with him. He's like, I don't complain. I'm not a complainer. I don't confront. And he said, what I do, I shut down. Okay.
Yeah, what else can
right
he do?
That he does not know how to handle
complaints.
And confrontations when she, on the other hand, is bitter and angry because when she wants him to do something or understand something,
he can't.
He doesn't. He just like, you know, he just clamps out, you know.
He shuts down.
But, you know, and to her, oh, you're ignoring me. You're rejecting me. You're telling me I'm not worth anything. You know, and I said, no, it's in your mind. I said, some people are meant to do and some things people are not meant to do. And he said, the best thing you can do, if you can do it for yourself, do it for yourself. Because if you've been in a relationship that long, you've been doing it for yourself all along. It's just that now you're realizing that you didn't have it. You're now just realizing that you've been, you know, compromising, you've been distracted, you've been the one that's been carrying the load, he's just been the provider, that's all. So when those areas, Naima, they're called role confusion.
Wow.
That's a confused role.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And we know families like that,
mm-hmm.
where the mother is the one, not the father, that disciplines the children.
Yeah.
You know,
she
and the father is more lenient to the point where, you know, he doesn't, he is not actually making changes. He's just allowing, you can do this and you can do that. Well, it's like, no, they can't do that.
Yeah, but see, he doesn't know. I mean, if he grew up in a household, the father was absent, the mother was the strong disciplinarian, and that's what he saw. And the mother might have been one of those that was, you know, she used her voice of attack as a means of controlling the children. So what this man experienced was a mother who was very harsh verbally, and it was very painful for him. The only way he could handle that is to shut down. And so that becomes the way he handles it in his marriage. And the wife, she perceives it, oh, he's ignoring me. But what he's doing is trying to protect himself emotionally. It's like putting up a shield, you know, to guard against all those harsh words that hurt. And that's all he has, because all he had was that one parent that was brutal verbally, but that's all she had because she was handling the discipline by herself. She didn't have the spouse to back her up and be the disciplinarian. So now here he is in a marriage, and he's a father, but he doesn't know how to be that disciplinarian or that person who shares the responsibility for that. So okay, he lets his wife do what he has seen mothers do. You know, you be the person that keeps the children in line. And meanwhile, you know, his wife is seeing that, you know, you're just giving me the whole burden of raising these children. You're not doing your share. And he's working as hard as he can. He's bringing home money. He's doing all this that he knows how to do. And he's like, I'm a father in the house. I'm bringing in money. I didn't have that. And yet she's still not satisfied. She's still angry. She's still attacking me. So I got to put up my shield again, you know, keep those words from hitting me. And that becomes the relationship. Two people seeing things differently, and both of them not able to reach a point of understanding. Because they don't know
right. And as I told her, I said, you have to, you know, determine your own identity. And since that you're so focused in what he's been doing, but you've been doing this all along.
Yeah.
This is not something that you just started doing. You've been compromising
in the way they
all
live.
Along. So why stop now?
Well, we gotta take a Well, we gotta take a break. But when we come back, I'd like to find out, how do you help couples to be able to communicate when they've got that pattern of, you know, I'm angry, I fuss at him, he shuts down, he doesn't understand, and he just said, look, I don't want to be bothered, I don't want to hear it, and that's the way they've been, and she's holding this anger year after year after year. How do you help couples change the pattern, or is it possible to change the pattern if that's how they've been for 40 years? So we'll be right back, and we've got a couple of callers. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1. We've got a couple of folks that have pressed 1 on the switchboard. And if you are watching us on Facebook Live on Soulful Solutions, then you can write in your comments and questions, and we'll share them with our listening and viewing audience. And we will be right back after this quick break, so we want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Hey, it's time to take charge of your health. I'm Viata, your holistic life coach, and every Friday morning at 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, I'm here on The Female Solution to empower you to make choices that will assist your evolution to abundant health. I'm also blogging every Sunday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time at Soul Purpose Healing, where I bring you a spiritual chiropractic adjustment to bring you back into alignment with our Creator's love, compassion, and wisdom. Join me every Friday morning at 8 a.m. and Sunday evening at 8 p.m. for a time of unity, enlightenment, and love vibration. Shalom.
The Female Solution Global Radio TV Show invites you to an invigorating conversation with our team of hosts Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Time. Start your week with Monday Morning Mindfulness with Zelda Speaks. Tuesdays, Self-Care with Jody Susan. Wednesdays, Repairing Broken Families with Naima Latif and co-host Kareem Hamid. Thursdays, Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green. And Fridays, Health and Well-Being with Viata. Saturdays, tune in 12 noon to 2 p.m. Central Time. First Saturday, Success Strategies with Jana. Second Saturday, Wendy Williams Esquire on Relationships. Third Saturday, Move Around with Deborah. And fourth Saturday, Wisdom with Mama D. Join us Sundays, 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Central Time for Soul Purpose Healing with Beata. Call in and comment 515-605-9325. Press 1 to speak to the host and be a part of the solution.
Hi, I'm Jody Susan with Susan Essentials. I started Susan Essentials in 2015 because of a personal health journey. I was over-medicated and put on 19 different medications. And yes, I reversed all my chronic diseases using plant and energy-based healing. It was amazing. At Susan Essentials, we support both consumers and businesses. And we do that with helping your employees or yourself with a food as medicine mindset. How Susan Essentials supports businesses and consumers is we teach people about a food as medicine mindset. So we support people on how to support their own immune system, how to support their brain health, how to support their emotional well-being. And we do that all with plant and an energy-based healing.
Tax are higher than ever. Every day, thousands of our residents leave Chicago to shop in Indiana. Jobs are being lost, and businesses are relocating. Let's find a way to lower our taxes to encourage residents to continue living and shopping in our city. Let's rebuild. Let's restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of the city of Chicago, and I will work hard to find solutions that matter. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
All right, welcome back. Welcome back to Soulful Solutions. I'm Dr. Debbie Green with my wonderful co-host, Naima Latif of The Female Solution, our executive producer. I'm trying to get it all out. All right, okay. So I think let's take a caller real quick, and then I'll address that other.
All right, so 312-568, your mic is
check
open.
Check it, all of it, the one that I thought would be good. God bless you. Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. We can hear you loud and clear. Give us your name, where you're calling from, and your question or comment.
I am sorry. This is Darva from Chicago, the Women Are Rising Ministry. Please forgive me. I was talking to I had someone on to come on the call with me. So yes, I was calling to let you know that I'm hearing what you're talking about. But I here to say, we must all go back to God, even in marriages and everything else. And we must do what God has called us to do in the marriage with a husband and the wife. God is the head of the husband, and the husband is the head of the wife, and the husband and wife is the head of the children. And so what I just wanted to say to you that marriage is definitely a covenant that was a holy covenant that was created by God from the beginning of time. We all must know that the words you teach, I did some episodes on marriage and husband and wife and divorce during my time of being married and divorced, and I found so many scriptures that relate to how we can keep our marriages going as far as the husband loving his wife like he left the church, and as far as the wife respecting her, honoring her husband and respecting her husband, and that's what makes up the family. I think that the husband and wife, the union is a love story, but we must follow everything. I don't want to get into a long conversation because I want to talk about divorce, marriage, and remarriage, but I'm not going to talk about all that. But my sisters, I want to say this to you guys. I wanted to honor Dr. Debbie of Green with her birthday coming up. I wanted to bring her to Chicago. And I know that I do try to do things by myself with the help of God, but I wanted you all to know that I need your help, sisters, to come with me. Not just me, but us. But I wanted to get all the particulars and specifications of the hotels and the meeting rooms and things of that sort. So I had my assistant working with me in the last couple weeks trying to get Dr. Debbie in Chicago, because Chicago needs someone like Dr. Debbie, not just for the 3 days we're trying to get her here, but I would like to her to come here on a regular basis because that's what God has asked me to do. And so I need your help. I'm saying this. It is kind of expensive for hotels and meeting rooms and even menu for food, but I come from that industry. So I've been checking with people, in Brownsville, in the South Loop, as well as Hyde Park. I do have the menus and venues and things of that sort of everything. And so I wanted to share that with you guys to ask you guys, if we all can come together and at least make a donation of at least $100 or more, or if you guys have any suggestions, please let me know, because I already have the menus, I have the locations, I have the hotels. I know that we don't have to select the most expensive hotel, but I wanted to put her in a very good area. Minister Plump, and when I brought it to him a couple of weeks ago, he said, why don't you use the Black Hotel, which is right in the South, South Loop. Everybody know about the South Loop Hotel. They do many great events. I did check with them also. They are the least expensive, but I wanted to put her in first class, which is right there where the Wintrust Arena is at, behind McCormick, and then they have the new three other new hotels sitting right there on the bank of 22nd and King Drive. So I'm just asking if everyone can put together to help me. I'm going to, do my part, but I want everybody else to help me to get her here. I looked at 3 days. Her birthday is the 10th, the 8th. So I looked at 3 days, the 8th, 9th, and 10th.
So you're going to plan your party right here on the show. But Sister Darva, let me ask you this. You put the thought out there. Can you real quick give us a website or email that people can reach you to continue your planning process?
Sure. I give you my phone number, which would be great. Then I can text you things right away, and then I can text you, and then I can speak to you personally. If you guys don't mind, you guys can reach me on my personal number, which is 312-366-5187, 312-366-5187. Once again, 312-366-5187. They are going to have a marathon during that time, so they are telling me, they have a lot going on during those seasons. So, but they are definitely willing to work with us.
Well, thank you, Sister Darva. We appreciate you so much. And thank you for your words regarding going back to the spiritual foundations of marriage. You know, when she mentioned that, I think a lot of people, especially if, you know, their foundation or maybe their relationship, you know, they met each other in the church and all of that, and or, you know, or the mosque or, you know, the temple, whatever religious structure they are coming into their marriage with together, and that can provide a foundation. But if a person has not dealt with unhealed wounds that they may have had, especially if they have been violated, if they have gone through abuse and they were in a family that didn't let them acknowledge it, didn't address it, maybe the family member is still around, or maybe they had to live with a family member, all of that is in you. And sometimes your religion can help you heal, and sometimes it's merely a mask for that which you have not addressed. But everything that you are comes out in your marriage. That is what marriage does. It exposes you, and your spouse becomes a mirror so that you can see yourself. And sometimes yourself is still suffering from the thing that you were not allowed to heal. Okay. And so what I have observed, and maybe Dr. W, you've had some clients with this situation, we got all the religion and the scriptures, and we can quote stuff, and we can, you know, throw God at each other back and forth and attack, or you ain't, you sinner, you darn this, you know, you're not following the Lord and all this stuff. And the anger that we are spewing out is from our hurt that was never healed. And we don't see it because we think, oh, I'm so religious, I'm so spiritual, I'm so godly. We don't see that our words that come from our pain are causing injury to our spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And they can't stand it. You know, and we might be this, you know, God-fearing, oh, go to church, go to every meeting every day kind of person. And we don't know that it's that inner pain that we never healed that is expressed as bitterness that we're still holding and verbal abuse to our spouse.
Right.
And we don't see it. And they may be driven to drink to stop the pain of our attack. So these kind of relationships, it happens when someone doesn't see that they're holding on to hurt on the inside, and it's being expressed at someone else who didn't hurt them, and they don't know that the effect of their words are causing pain, and they don't see it because they're religious. So speak to that if you would, and if you've seen that kind of thing, and how we can help a person recognize that they may be doing that in their marriage.
Well, absolutely. We know that in the church setting, there's a lot of different things that's going on, so that's obvious. Especially in these times, you often see, you know, a pastor kills his wife and vice versa. You know, I mean, it's real. Especially a lot of bitterness is in the church. You know, people come inside the church and kill each other, you know. So, I mean, it is obvious that they're not exempt, you know, in any type of way, regardless of their religious, you know, obligations. Does God play a great role in that? You know, well, we have to know that God is agape. The agape love of God is not bitter. It's not boastful. It's not. You know, it doesn't tear us down. It doesn't, you know, make us feel self-defeated or self-destructive. So there is nothing in there present. That is just a ball of unresolved emotions. Suppressed emotions that person's been dealing with for periods of time due to the fact that they lost control and it's time for them to move on and change needs to occur because people don't handle change very well. You know, when there's two parties that are no longer in the same mindset, you know, rather you've been married from 1 year to 50 years, and when that time comes when that person starts to stray away from each other, for whatever particular reasons, infidelity or just growing apart, there is such a thing, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I mean, one would sometimes get bitter because they no longer have control over the situation. And so that bitterness then turns into, you know, bouts of resentment and rage, and here we go. We are right back where we started from, destroying each other with our words, our gestures, our behaviors, and our habits. Is that the answer to it? No, it's not the answer to it. Again, you know, through couples, families, or what have you, you know, whether you're serving God or not serving God, if you don't understand the word love, you won't be able to, you know, have an abundant life or have a life of peace. You have to understand love, but most of all, you got to live love. You know, it's just one of those things that people often don't get. They don't get it. They just, again, we want control, but then we don't want to change. You know, we don't want to change. We want things to remain the way we want them and people to do what we want them to do. It doesn't work that way. We cannot control people.
So how do
we can control ourselves? How do you control a person?
Right. So how do you help couples get to that point of being able to communicate after angry words have been said, hurtful words have been said, a pattern has developed where, you know, one person spews out anger, the other person shut down to keep themselves from feeling the pain of that verbal attack, and the person who is attacking is expressing pain inside of them that maybe they have never been able to address, and so that just becomes the pattern of the relationship. I attack you because I feel like you're neglecting me or not appreciating me, and then you withdraw because you don't want to hear it, and the anger builds and builds and builds, and now we can't have a discussion because this is the pattern that we've developed. How do you help couples break that pattern where they can hear each other and resolve what the core situation may really be?
I often ask them, are you emotionally available for your spouse? Are your partner?
And what does that actually mean, being emotionally available?
When you are emotionally available, that means you're no longer just feeling for yourself or what you feel or what you think. You're also taking in consideration how the other person is really feeling.
And usually in those situations they don't. They're caught in their emotion, their anger, their resentment, their
right.
You know.
Correct. So now we have to go back to what is called, you know what I'm saying, empathizing. You got to get in the practice of empathizing. Empathizing is that I hear you, I see you, but I need to feel
what you're feeling.
You feel.
Yeah.
Not for sympathy, not for pity, but I need to put the shoe on the other foot and
feel what you're feeling.
So when I'm emotionally available for you, I'm empathizing.
Mm-hmm.
So if I'm not emotionally available, no matter what you say or no matter what you do, I can't hear you emotionally, because emotions have a message as well. Just as our voice is verbal message, there are also emotional messages. An emotional message of guilt, for example, is saying, I feel guilty because of something I said or something I did. You know what I'm saying? So that guilt is the emotional message letting you know to go ahead and resolve that and move on. It doesn't mean that you hold on to it.
What if
I'm guilty because of another partner, or let's say for infidelity, I feel guilty because I had infidelity. Okay, so the partner that experienced the infidelity, okay, they have to do one or two things. They either have to accept it or not accept it. You see what I'm saying? So if they accept it, okay, so what do we do with this? I mean, are we going to split apart or are we going to work it out together and so it will not happen again? You can only do one or two things. But some people stay in a relationship and do neither.
So what happens when you're stuck there of one person's guilt, you know, I stepped outside of our marriage, you know, maybe it was because of the emotional hurt that I felt being in your presence. I needed, you know, emotional comfort or something from someone else, so I stepped out, but I feel guilty that I did this, and then the other person's still angry. You stepped out of our marriage, and I'm angry, and so they're spewing even more verbal attack, which doesn't bring the two together. They remain at this impasse? How does that get resolved when neither can empathize with the other because they've got these clashing emotions, so they can't move to a point of empathy because the anger is in the way? You know, I'm guilty that I did this, but I'm angry at how you're responding, and then I'm angry that you did this, and I'm holding on to my anger, and I'm not going to acknowledge that there is something valid in your feelings that made you make this decision. I'm going to stay with attack. And even, again, you know, the sister mentioned, you know, okay, go back to God. Well, if a person's saying, well, what you did was a violation, and if you were a godly person, you wouldn't have done it, and if they're stuck there, they can't get to the point of empathy with, I was hurting, and at that point, you couldn't hear me, and I ended up being drawn to someone who could.
Well, actually, you know, one thing, if we're just specifically talking about infidelity, that causes bitterness. If that person compromises with the relationship and chooses to stay in the relationship, what's going to end up happening is that later on in the relationship, if something is going to collide, and that's what you're talking about. Because deep down inside, you know, the sacredness of the relationship is already broken. The marriage vows is already broken. So one usually tries to stay in it. And now, if we go back to that particular situation I was talking about earlier, where the man that grew up without the father and the woman that was raising the children, okay, when he was actually early on in this marriage of 40 years, he actually was committing an infidelity. And even his mother told her, why are you here? Why are you staying here? And he's cheating on you.
Mm-hmm.
Because she experienced that from his father.
So that's what he learned.
Correct. So she was the angry black woman. She was still angry, and she never married again, according to what she told me. She never married again because she was angry, and she didn't want to go back through that same pattern again, thinking that this is just going to happen again to me. I don't trust men. I don't want to be involved with them to that point where I want to have a longevity relationship. So we go back to the area of why would a person compromise? Why would they compromise thinking that, you know, something was going to change, one, but also think that, oh, I'm supposed to be here even though you are not totally committed to me because that's what you're telling me. When you actually have an adulterous affair, okay, you're not totally committed to me. So, I mean, whether it's one time, two times, or whatever time. No, so what does that do? That's a brewing area of nothing but bitterness. The bitterness is going to come on the other half. It's going to come from the other half that's being done, for it being done too. And we find that in domestic violence. We go back to domestic violence in that time. When a person is violated in some type of way, in this way, a person gets extremely angry. And if they get angry, of course, they can go into other areas with that bitterness, such as, again, homicidal or, you know, brutality of abuse.
So it seems like, and I know we've got to take our last break, it seems like that the breakdown comes from, in what you say, being emotionally available to the other person, where you can talk about the underlying things motivating your behavior, and both parties are willing to listen and not attack, and that's where it seems like the breakdown comes.
Right.
And issues of infidelity, where a person feels like you violated our vow to be exclusive, that is difficult when neither party can listen to the other, and the issue is only blame and guilt, and neither party can empathize because all they feel is they're hurt.
Correct.
So how do you get past that? We'll talk about that when we come back. And if you are listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9325. If you're on our switchboard now, press 1, and we'll come right to you and open your mic after this break. And if you haven't spoken yet and have something to say, feel free to press 1, and we'll be right back. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back after these messages.
Oh, man. God sent the monthly sun bill today. This sunlight is really expensive, especially during this season. I'll probably have to work overtime to pay it.
Well, you better pay it on time. We don't want the sun to go out and we're sitting up here all day in the dark.
Wouldn't it be terrible if God charged us for sunlight? Well, thank God, the light and heat from the sun is free. So why are we paying such high bills for the energy we use in our homes? Because we don't know how to use solar energy, the free energy from the sun. You can convert your regular home to a solar energy home and save tremendously on your electric bill. Take a look at your electric bill. Wouldn't you like to reduce or possibly even eliminate that cost altogether? Let one of our solar consultants show you how. Call today, 312-849-3456, and schedule a free consultation. That's 312-849-3456.
If you could live to be 120 years old and remain active, healthy, alert, and vibrant, our bodies are made up of cells that are constantly rejuvenating. So if we take proper care of ourselves, we can literally defy aging. Join us every Tuesday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Central Standard Time to learn about self-care from Susan Essentials on the Female Solution Blog Talk Radio Show. Learn how to help your body and your cells feel rejuvenated each day through proper nutrition, sleep, frequency medicine, and many unconventional methods of self-care. I'm Jody Susan. Join me and my amazing guests by calling in at 515-605-9325 and press 1 to speak. We'll help you achieve a breakthrough in your health today.
Our kids are the future and should not be left behind. One person should not decide what is the best for our 77 communities. Politicians must work together for our kids' best interests. They deserve a safe education with resources that meet every student need. Let's rebuild and restore Chicago. Vote for me for mayor of Chicago. I'm Dr. Willie Wilson, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Willie Wilson for Mayor.
Oh, are we done? Okay.
Action and behavior, but no feeling. Mm.
And you say, well, why can they not feel? Why can they not know? Because that was the question that one of my clients asked me. Why can't he see me? Why can't he feel what I'm feeling? It's because he's only feeling
what he's
for
feeling.
Himself.
Right. Now, we had an interesting conversation yesterday with a men-only discussion, and they were talking about abortion, but then it got to the issue of sex and sex without an emotional attachment and maybe how men are conditioned to not feel what they're making women feel because they're conditioned to do that by other men who, you know, are not conditioned to feel what women feel. So we have this ongoing war of the sexes with this situation. And so sex symbolizes so many things. And when men see it as sex is validation of my manhood, and they see that, but they don't understand the emotional, psychological, spiritual attachment that that act creates, they don't understand the reactions of women when after they have had the experience, and for them, okay, I'm triumphant, and I'm validated as a man, and that's all I need. Okay, well, I don't need to talk to you anymore because I'm done. And they don't understand the depth of the pain that causes because they have not been taught. And then you have women who, if there is a sexual intimacy, for them, that very real psychological, biochemical, spiritual connection is there. And so when that's broken, then they feel violated and angry. And so we have these two different ways people are trained to see sexuality that causes a perpetual conflict. So now when you have a marriage, which for a woman means I am safe and secure in our intimate relationship, and it is an exclusive relationship with someone who loves me. So if the man has sex with someone else outside the marriage, then in her feeling about that, that is a violation of their agreement to be exclusive. And for her, it means you don't value me and you are violating my trust. But for him, perhaps it is, I sought validation of my manhood somewhere else because the way I was feeling in our relationship, you know, whether you were a verbal attack or whatever it was, you were making me feel bad. So I sought validation with my sexual intimacy with someone else. So he's not feeling that sex meant the same thing as she is feeling that it meant. And because they don't see it the same, they can't hear each other or empathize because there is the anger. And then when you bring in the condemnation from a religious belief, you're stuck at condemnation. So now you've got condemnation of an act. He's got guilt about the act, but neither can heal the pain that caused the act, which was the brokenness in their communication, their ability to empathize, and their ability to understand how they're making the other person feel with however they're behaving toward each other in the household.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we help couples get unstuck from that dynamic, which is so very common, and we get stuck on condemnation and not understanding, and we get stuck on religious condemnation because that's what we've been taught instead of seeing the heart of the person, both hearts that are hurt because they couldn't talk about what was causing them pain.
Right. Well, first of all, if you were counseling those two individuals, you have to counsel them independently and not together and help them to understand their own identity. Because, see, the thing about this is, Naima, we lose our identity in so many different roles, you know, and roles of just being, you know, like husbands, wives, or, you know, fathers to our children or mothers to our children. So we lose our identity in so many different aspects of life. And when we lose identity, we also lose the ability to understand the self and control the self. So, you know, all of the stuff that impacts us from the outside end of external stimuli, you know, external is anything, whatever's coming from the outside. It's not on the inside, it's coming from the outside. It could be the way you were raised. It could be what you've been exposed to, such as religious sectors. It could be, you know, what somebody thinks of you. You had, I mean, it can go on and on. But at the end of the day, you see what I'm saying? You have to know, okay, what am I doing with me? How am I living my life? How am I living, you know, my life when it comes to me, and what I'm allowing to go out of this being, but most of all to come into this being. So now we got that thing called self-awareness. So if I'm self-aware in my relationship with my cohort, with my partner, with my husband, wife, what have you, then I'm looking at self. Okay, self, are you perpetrating? Are you perpetrating? Which means are you saying the truth about a situation or are you not? You see what I'm saying? Are you fear-based mindset? See, there's so many different ways you want to realize what am I really doing. And it's not, oh, you made me say this or you made me do that. You're not looking at it from that platform anymore. You're looking at it from what am I doing? Mm-hmm. Am I producing a sense of understanding? Am I putting out, if I'm sending out messages that I feel comfortable with myself, or if I'm sending out messages of inferiority, I'm sending out messages of anger, if I'm sending out, you know, you first have to realize what you are doing in a relationship, because there's three sides to every story. There's hers, there's his, and then there's the unalterated truth.
You're right.
Right? So we want to get back to that balance of truth. So the truth is going to be the one that set everybody free. It's going to improve trust. Trust, when trust improves, then communication is going to improve. You cannot have communication without trust. Because if a person don't trust you, they're not going to talk to you
talk
openly.
Right. That's the thing. And they can't talk openly when every conversation is an argument. And,
no,
that's where couples get stuck. There's no trust. You know, and I can feel a lot of men say, yeah, you know, but you're saying to men, what about women who cheat and all that sort of thing? It's the same dynamic when you seek something outside of your marriage that you felt that you didn't get from your marriage because you need to feel validated, loved, whatever it is. It's the same process.
It is.
And so, you know, calling the women a bunch of names because she did that is not any more helpful than calling the man a bunch of names. The thing is, I didn't trust my partner enough to talk to him about how I was feeling, so I found someone who would listen to me, and that person made me feel how I needed to feel, and so we had an intimate experience. That's how the woman sees it, same as how the man sees it. And the person who felt violated with infidelity is angry and too angry to be empathetic and to hear a person saying, but you made me feel bad and I needed to, I felt that I felt that this other person made me feel better. The person who's been violated in a situation of infidelity, they can't hear that. All they can hear is, you violated me. You violated our agreement, our relationship, our bond, our trust. I can't trust you anymore. That's all they can hear. They can't hear what preceded that. And so they never get to a point of healing because they never get to a point of empathy because they're stuck in their anger. And if there's at the core of their being a feeling of unworthiness, that's what that person has tapped into, and that's the button that they've pressed. That's the trigger that they pulled in going outside of the marriage to another intimate partner, that feeling of I am unworthy of love. That's really what the person is angry at, that feeling that they have triggered in themselves because of another person's behavior.
Right.
So it's an unhealed wound in them somewhere that keeps them from being able to take the focus off of what you did to me to what is it that you were feeling that made you do this act. And not necessarily blaming myself, you know, I drove you to another man or I drove you to another woman. No, something inside of you was unfulfilled and you stepped outside the relationship because the trust between us was broken and we couldn't talk about it.
Absolutely. And again, I often say, and before you even get in a relationship, you have to always consider it, you know, the worst of the worst, you know. Before you get in the relationship, consider yourself, how am I going to react if this happens? You know what I'm saying? And it's not that you want it to happen, but you still need to know how you're going to react to it because there's a chance that it could, you know what I'm saying? Can you handle when, you know, someone is no longer faithful to you? And, I mean, will you be the bitter, you know, black woman, black man, white man, whatever, you know what I'm saying? When, you know, because that's what happens. In a relationship, a heterosexual relationship, or any relationship, monogamous, or even, you know, a gay homosexual lifestyle, it doesn't matter because when that happens, you have to either, you know, again, allow yourself to think about it from a point of view of, is this thing going to tear me to pieces? Is it going to, you know, destroy me? Because that sometimes it does. It does, and people become extremely bitter. And, you know, bitterness, I just want to say this because I know our time is winding up. Bitterness can be in any relationship, you guys. It doesn't matter. You could be bitter at your boss, you know, at work, you know what I'm saying, because of how he or she talks to you. And you could just build up, you know, animosity in your heart because you're not saying anything. Bitterness is caused from suppressed emotional baggage over periods of years.
Yes.
I just want to let you know the causes of this. Suppressed, holding things back, repression, oppression of things that you've been holding inside of yourself for many, many years.
Mm.
And the thing, that energy does not dissipate. It doesn't go away. It doesn't melt.
There.
It doesn't dissolve. It's still there because of something you didn't say. It's something that you wanted to say and didn't get the opportunity to say, or you felt you couldn't say it, however it was, because words have power. And those words that we feel about ourselves or those words that someone else may say to us can lay dormant inside our being, creating landmines, because that's the only way I can compare it to something that's very powerful that can explode at any time. We hold the issues of life in our heart. So if you're holding the issues of life in your heart, that means all of the emotional baggage from the time you were born, and I know this may be something surreal to somebody who's listening to me, all of those emotions that you did not get the opportunity to cipher through, to filter through, to resolve, to finalize from whatever experience, whatever repercussion, consequence, situation, those things are still in there, and they lay dormant until one day you try to open up and there's something else that you want to put in there. When the heart is at its capacity, it can't do nothing but weld, W-E-L-D. And welding is just what it is. It comes up, and sometimes you feel like it's choking you. You feel like your chest is heavy, and you walk around with this thing trying to figure out, why am I so tense around my neck? Why does my head feel like it's pounding? Why does my stomach seem like it's always in knots? Because of the energy that you have inside of you that has not been resolved. And that's the goal that you need to do for yourself before you leave this earth. You should not hold on to nothing that tears you down. It is not worth it. Trust and believe. Mm-hmm. You deserve a wonderful life. You deserve a life of peace. You deserve a life of freedom. Freedom is something that is earned and is given freely, but nobody takes it seriously.
So one last question before we go. There are a lot of couples that come into a marriage and they are still holding wounds from their relationship with the opposite sex parent, whether it's a man who has mother issues because of whatever may have happened between him and his mother, or a woman who has issues with her father because of whatever may have happened between her and her father, and they come into a marriage not able to communicate with the opposite sex as a result of their relationship with their opposite sex parent. And so while there may be romance and love and all of that, but there's not the level of trust where when something happens, they can talk about it with their spouse. And so perhaps the inner bitterness that they're having, they don't even know the source of it, and it somehow gets expressed toward their spouse. And the you have two people who are broken and in pain and been suppressing anger all their lives coming together trying to find comfort in a relationship, but they can't because of suppressed pain and they don't know the source of it. Is there a way when, you know, would they do whatever they end up doing to each other that is rooted in their childhood unresolved pain that they're carrying? Is there a way to help both of them see themselves, first of all, and then empathize with the other person who is also in pain so they can open up lines of communication and trust and talk about it and relieve themselves of the pain that they've been carrying?
Absolutely, yes. In that case, Naima, you really have to go back to the first stages of the relationship. The first stage of the relationship is when I met you, you met me, we loved each other. And you have to allow that to permeate even through the toughest of times. Like, you know, I often ask each party before I bring them together independently, I ask them, how did you feel for this person? Like, what kind of feelings did you have for them when you first met this person? Oh, I think they were wonderful, blah, blah, blah. Okay, I said, so what do you think changed? And they could tell me some kind of action or behavior or habits that changed over the years. And I say, well, so that part of you that still is here, because apparently you're still in the relationship, you want to work on a relationship, because you could have left the relationship a long time ago. So that means there's a certain part of you that still loves this human being. All right, so we're going to go from that part right there. I don't want you to look at the faults of that person. I want you to look at the love that you have for them. And I would tell the other party the same thing. So now I'm asking them to start allowing their mindset to be filtered through all of the disruption or the anger or whatever the case is, to go back to that love component and then build from that love component. And sometimes what even happens if there's a relationship that's been 18 years, 20 years, that might have been in trouble of some sort, they might even got to the point that they can renew vows and even start all over. Mm-hmm. And then once they communicate with each other, they say, yes, you did this to me, but I chose today to forgive you, you know, and they need to let that be verbal. It needs to be a verbal commitment between two individuals. When you bring them back together and you talk to them, like I said, in comfort, you bring them back together after they have dealt with some of their raw emotions independently. You bring them back together and they should be able to talk to each other without this hostility inside of them. You see what I'm saying? But okay, so what are we willing to do? We're willing to make a change because that's the only way you're going to come out of this. So I have to learn how to trust you all over again. I have to learn how to communicate with you all over again. So it's a starting point. You have to start over, you know, and then build from that, because you can't continue the same process of destruction of the marriage, because otherwise it's going to break loose and it's going to dissolve. So you have to go back to the simplistic parts of the first reunion. Mm. And that's where I take them. And then I kind of walk them through that process. Okay, what are we willing to forgive? Okay, if there was infidelity, are we willing to forgive that? Do you forgive her? Do you forgive him? So you don't hold on to any excessive emotional baggage going into the new process of that marriage.
Hmm. Well, I think that is a solution. We have a person who's pressed one, but I'm sorry, we're really out of time. We've got to go. We only got a minute left, which means you won't get a chance to get an answer to your question. But please feel free to call in again, you know, next week. We'll be back again. Solution Global Radio TV Show with Soulful Solutions with Dr. Debbie Green, and live on Facebook on Soulful Solutions. So tune on in and call in, and please try to call in before 5 minutes before the end of the show, because we want to give you a chance to express your thought.
Yes,
we're not doing
absolutely.
An after show today because she's got to go to work. So we must go. But thank
absolutely.
You all so much.
Thank you so much for listening. Again, we're getting ready to go on to YouTube really soon. So keep us right here. Thank you.
We've come to the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, Sheshe. India, Zanyaba. Japan, Arigato. Korea, Kamsamnida. Russia, Spasiba. Germany, Danke. Poland, Dziękuję. France, Merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, medasi. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, jeret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur, Saudi Arabia, Shukran, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you, and may peace be upon you, and the mercy of God, and God's blessings.